Welcome one and all to episode number 11 of Hot Air in 2018. My name is Greg Esser. You're tuning in for some hot breeze content about the AUDL team hailing from Washington, D.C. I will keep a very short upfront today. I've got an epic tale, a long interview with Coach Daryl Stanley, all the big takeaways from the season. Of course, hopefully you've already heard the news, which is the Breeze are eliminated from the playoffs this year, and Coach Stanley and I will go through all those details today on the podcast. My broadcast schedule will also slim down a lot in the offseason. I go usually from the every other week schedule to more like an every other month schedule, but I will get those episodes out as we get some developments about the 2019 season. In the meantime, let me quickly plug the August 28th Breeze-affiliated Eurostars versus Scandal. DC Women's Ultimate Game. I'll be present there. Definitely recommend you come. It's at a Virginia high school, but find it on the DCBreeze.com. Hope to see everyone out there. Some high-level Women's Ultimate that we get all too rarely in that single-game format. I also want to quickly go through our sponsors: Papa John's Pizza, Spectrum Management, Port City Brewing Company, Oak Creek Apparel, Murphy's Grill, American Ultimate Academy, Universe Point Cleats, Cobalt CRM Solutions, and our nonprofit partners, Spirit of the Sport, the American Equity Invite, and ForestPlanet.org. Thanks again for listening. I'll turn it over to the Brooke Royals to play us in with that hot air tune. Sitting with Daryl Stanley, hot air number 3 for you, Coach Stanley. Ooh. Rarefied air, you have joined the ranks of Glenn Poole, multiple season player on the Breeze, also fellow analyst. You're joining the ranks of the great Rowan McDonald, a guy you've now coached for 2 years. How does it feel to be sitting in the chair for the third time?
A little hot.
A little hot, yeah. Which makes sense. It's right in the name. Yeah. It's a little spicy, and there's some spicy questions on deck today.
That's why my seat's feeling warm.
Yeah. That makes total sense. But and the questions today are going to be true to that theme. There's some hard ones because the Breeze, unfortunately, I was hoping we'd have weeks more of podcasts analyzing the postseason of this 2018 year. But the aspirations were cut short. The Breeze were eliminated the other week in a tough game against the Empire. We'll talk about that a lot. But I think there are some victories to celebrate about this season as well. So we'll get into those topics. We'll talk about the playoffs themselves. Is there anything that... there is one thing. I almost handed the mic over to you, but before I do that, I congratulations is in order because you are coaching left and right and center. You're coaching everywhere, and you have one new coaching opportunity coming to you, a very prestigious one. Prestigious. Under 24. You like prestigious?
Yeah.
Under 24, USAU... Assistant coach, Daryl Stanley. How does that sound?
I think it's amazing. National team is like, I don't know, like, I didn't expect that. And I just really was really, really, really excited when my application was even turned into an interview. And then, yeah, this is unbelievable.
It's cool.
I get to select an all-star team of college players. Like, pretty much like what the Breeze was this season, yeah. Except on a national scale.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. And I think, you know, because you... are a coach of such diverse different levels, and you're a coach in the Mid-Atlantic where there are lots of colleges but not always a consolidation of talent. It'll be really interesting to see you making some of those decisions.
Yeah, it's going to be wild.
And a little bit of an outsider, too, just because it's your first post.
Yeah, I mean, the people I'm with, Bob Cryer, it's his fourth cycle, I believe.
Uh-huh.
Joe Durst, it's his third cycle. So I'm really happy to not have to walk in and like have all the answers right away. I can, you know, learn...
Yeah.
From some veterans.
And yeah, that's a great mentality to hear out of you. It's the same one you brought to D.C., and I think that was really appealing for the Breeze. For me, talking to you is like you came here knowing there were some coaches around and just trying to suck up whatever you could.
Right, like yeah. Smo and, of course, Dutchie. Like,
yeah.
These are just they're super experienced, and they've done a lot, and it was great to work with them.
Awesome. So congratulations. Official from Hot Air.
Thank you.
But we'll get into the main event here. And the first thing we'll do some awards. It's fun. I don't think it's really award season, but we can call it award season. There are a couple categories I thought of. I'm willing to have you talk about any player if there are other awards that I missed. But talk to me about the roster of the 2018 Breeze and give out the first one I'll do, MVP, they're overplayed. Give me that Outstanding Individual Achievement Award.
Ooh.
All the vowels, OIA, Outstanding Individual Achievement.
So the OIA.
The OIA.
I felt like there were three OIAs.
Three OIAs?
Three.
Okay, I can buy that. Who you got?
So for me, each of these players came into the season having established a certain level for the Breeze. I feel like all of them needed to take a step up in order for us to be a competitive team this season. Making the playoffs was mind-blowing. I think that was like obviously a stretch goal for us, and we achieved it.
Yeah.
On the backs of these three. So, Rowan. Rowan is like the...
Rowan McDonald.
I think everyone saw this player go up. He became a superstar this year.
Yeah.
You know, like I said at the beginning of the season that he was MVP capable. I think on the AUDL Game of the Week podcast, even Evan Leppler agreed with that assessment based on just stats.
Yeah, Leppler's been touting the case for sure.
Yeah, he's like definitely on the short list. I mean, Mark Burton had a great season. There's a lot of people who put up some, you know,
yeah,
insane numbers. But I think Rowan did it in a way where it was like really just dynamic for
yeah.
us.
And that's a great word you use, because I think that's where I came in and where I've been coming. The angle I've been coming in on Rowan McDonald is, yeah, the numbers are there. They check out. They're MVP worthy. But he also played through injury, which people aren't always willing to do. He also played multiple roles on the team. This is a guy that put up a lot of O and a couple D-line points. He came over from D-line within recent memory. Yep. So we know he's got the bona fides for a D-line player. And he ended up dropping back and throwing a heck of a lot of assists, too.
Yeah, he played handler for several games.
Yeah.
One where his hamstring wasn't quite fit.
Yeah.
And afterwards, when we had, you know, some shortages due to, you know, injuries and absences, he played handler.
Led the team in goals and assists.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. So, and
I think only, like, Ben Yacht has that probably distinction, too.
Yeah. Actually, and the other guy in the East that I've been touting the case of a little bit as well, and I think is true leading the team in assists and goals, Sean Mott. Philadelphia.
Right.
Yeah.
So here are these three, you know, incredible cutter, dynamic cutters that,
yeah,
just really showed up. But continuing individual
achievement, yeah, for certainly.
Right. These two, I think, took a step. Actually, I'm going to separate them. I think the step they both took is just different.
Yeah.
Rico Johnson.
Sure.
Yeah, I talked to him in the offseason. I said to him that I felt it was really important for him to take that next step, to become that guy who just was super consistent with his throws, his defense, his cuts. I challenged him to be, you know, more of a individual defender rather than more of a team defender. Like, don't try to help as much. See if you can focus on really shutting down your person.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to put you on all sorts of matchups. He guarded Derek Alexander for several points.
Oh, that's interesting, yeah.
Right. There we go, Derek.
Yeah.
He guarded, you know, people you'd expect him to guard. Tall guys.
Sure.
Deep cutters.
Yeah.
Right. So I was able to kind of have him do that. He bounced to O-line several times. I think he probably started three or four games in the O-line this season.
Yeah, I think that's the interesting thing there, too. I think you're touting, again, another piece of the equation that showed some flexibility for you as a coach. You know, we know that the AUDL has availability challenges.
Yeah.
The Breeze suffered a lot of injuries this year. And Rico, you know, rolled with the punches.
Very much so. And was like, where do you need me, coach? I'm doing it.
Yeah.
So I think he took that step from, like, you know, obviously everyone knows who he is.
Yeah.
He's very well known. He's made SportsCenter. He's been a DC.
He's been heckled with a da-na-na, da-na-na.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
DC and Baltimore, excuse me.
Yeah.
You know, legend, maybe at this point.
Yeah.
But what he did this season was just to another level, and it shows in the stats.
Yeah.
I mean, his plus-minus, I don't even normally, like, enjoy that stat that much. I think it can really overplay, you know, role players.
Yep.
But the fact is that Rico was putting them up with assists. I think he had over 20 assists this season.
Yep.
The goals, the blocks. You know, he led our team in blocks. So he was tied, I think you were telling me earlier, he tied in the East.
The East.
For the lead in blocks.
That's exactly right. Three guys in the East had 19 blocks. He's one of them.
And he played, what, a third of his season on the O-line? It's pretty hard to get that many blocks.
Yeah, that's very true. No, and to round out the piece of that equation, he had 23 assists and 36 goals. So pretty
with
impressive.
With 19 blocks?
Yeah.
That's an incredible season. What was his throwing percentage, Greg?
Well, and the other thing I was going to say is, and all those counting numbers came up with, you're absolutely right, the majority of his points on D-line.
Right.
Throwing percentage of 92%.
See, like, this is epic. You know, people always talk about whether or not Rico can throw, you know, I think he just proved it. Yeah. He just threw that many assists. He was that dynamic for us and played O-line and D-line to be able to do that with a 92% throwing percentage means he was making a lot of the right choices.
Yeah.
So I think that he absolutely became a star for us this year.
No, it might have been a 91, except that Joe Richards made that great layout, spectacular save, keeping him away from a throwaway. But so he cost you Joe Richards down the stretch.
I was very Rico wants that flick back.
I know.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. I'll have to confront him in person. I mean, I think I've been talking about it enough here that I maybe need to apologize. It's a rough situation and not really the thrower's fault.
All people are disappointed with the outcome of that. Except Joe, because he caught it.
Yeah.
Nice job, Joe.
Yeah. Way to go.
So my third and final Oya.
Yeah, sure.
I'm gonna go with Troy Holland.
Ooh, that's an interesting pick. Why would you take Troy?
Troy, last season, really couldn't get going. I think that was supposed to be his breakout year for the Breeze. I think he played the year before for a few games.
Yeah,
I think
he was still not a lot of playing time.
He was still graduating, right?
Yep.
From Georgetown. So, you know, it made sense that he wasn't available throughout that 16th season. 17th season was very unfortunate with injuries. So he comes in the 18th season, and it's like, well, this is one of these, like in the NBA, you see this all the time, right? Top three draft pick and
you know, make or break season a little bit.
Right, a Jabari Parker. It's like, well, we know what Jabari was. Can he really deliver? And he never got that opportunity to. 2-3 years delayed.
Yeah.
Or anybody on the Sixers.
Yep.
So Troy was able to stand out and play the role like we all expected him to do, but even better. I didn't know, for instance, that Troy was such a I knew he liked to look to give and goes and stuff. I didn't know he could be that high percentage with it.
Yeah.
I think the year before, he was practicing with us a lot, didn't get on the roster too much because he was still trying to come back from that injury. But, you know, he wasn't as sharp. Here, he was super sharp. But he was
160 throws with only 3 throwaways. It's good for a 98% completion percentage.
He's a 98% thrower. Like, what?
Yeah.
Here's another guy I played O-line and D-line. Here's another guy I asked to guard the fastest man on the other team every single time.
Yep.
And Troy was just like, sure, coach, I got it. And, you know, I think he didn't put up a lot of assists or goals because he was basically the guy providing the glue.
Yeah.
Like, the connectivity between the two halves of my offenses. You know, I was running a lot of vert this year. And Troy was the one who, like, pretty much would switch the field for us, get us out of late stall situations. You know, he was just a disc mover.
That's impressive.
He was great.
And coming kind of from where he's been at in past seasons, that's breakout. That's outstanding individual achievement.
That's what I'm saying. Thank you, Troy.
Next category that I wanted to pitch to you, most growth. This could be an on the field, off the field, you know, where do you see your growth? And I think I might have a contender for this as well.
Yeah?
Yeah.
All right. Well, when I thought about that question, I'm thinking like from the year before to now, I think that's
you have a 2-year lens on this a little bit.
Yeah, that's a good window for me.
Yeah.
And for me, the leader there has got to be Joe Richards.
That's a great pick.
Yeah, like Joe had, statistically, it didn't make a lot of impact that first year. We saw it in practice. We saw a lot of the plays that he made this year in practice, but he wasn't consistent. And I think he'll be the first to tell you that. And this year, consistency was, you know, he came right from Mary Washington. He made it to Nationals, which was an amazing achievement for he and Zach. Then he just said, you know, I'm going to do this. I'm going to go guard Ben Yon. No problem, coach. I can take him out. All right, yeah, you did. You got blocks on Ben Yon. There's very few people who can say that they can do that.
That's true.
You know, then he followed that up the next week against Pittsburgh, I believe. We went away to Pittsburgh, and Joe, like, just wrecked them.
Yeah.
And he got, like, 2 or 3 blocks in that game, maybe even 4.
And I've always known he could get the blocks, but I liked your first point more, which is, like, now he's also, you know, his hands are more certain.
Yes, he catches better. His throwing percentage was way improved.
Yeah. There was a time or two last year where, you know, maybe he boinked an easy pass in the end zone, and I said, this calls into question every time he's open.
But I mean, not
the case this year.
And he had some times where he was looking to huck and make plays, I think, coming underneath last season. And, you know, this year we're like, hey, you know, Joe, you know, it's not necessarily the look for you on this team. And he said, yep, you know, played this role. And he played it much better than I think. He just is so close to his potential, but not even. Like, I think this is just the beginning of him just making consistent impact and probably starting to terrorize the East, like you see Yacht do and Babbitt has done. Like, I think next year everyone's going to say, like, this Joe Richards or what Antoine's doing out West. I think Joe has that kind of potential.
Nice. Well, and then hopefully a good recovery from this injury he's dealing with as well.
Yeah,
we'll enable that.
Oof. I think so. It won't affect his legs.
Yeah.
And his jumping and his catching, so.
That's right.
I think it'll be pretty
good. Yeah, probably an easier, dare I say, an easier major injury to come back from, the collarbone.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to contend Joe Richards, so he actually stole some of the words right out of my mouth, so I'm liking where your head's at.
Okay.
Another one that jumped to my mind was Reese Bergeron.
Okay.
A guy that, when I looked at your roster at the beginning of this year, I questioned. He's got a guy that I haven't seen reach those upper echelons of ability.
Sure.
And there were times this year where I watched him take over an offensive possession. I watched his give-and-go ability coming up from the backfield, gaining 5 yards forward with his throw, and then gaining another 5 or 15 by cutting up line.
Yeah.
Quick feet, quick acceleration. Certainly, to me, looked like growth, considering I had only seen him in limited exposure in previous years, amateur and club around the area, but never saw that full array of ability.
Yeah, you know, it's like, calling him a gamer is cheap. I don't use that too much, but there's something about, like, he's greater than the sum of the parts.
Mm.
He makes plays that's consistently, defensively, athletically, and then just with his throws, he's just, like, confident. He's like, I'm going to do this. This is what the team needs. I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
I think having coached against him, you know, he's with Tech. I was coaching Maryland. I started to see why. The role that he fills in that team alongside another DC Breeze vet, Joe Freund.
Yep.
The role he fills in that team is, like, the do everything, solve everything kind of guy. Like, oh, we need to solve it. The opponent is beating us in this area. Reese is the one that steps right up, tries to take that matchup or solve that problem. So, I don't know what it is. It's just like, he's just very determined and very confident and also like aggressive in a good way. Like, assertive on the field. And that's what makes him tick, along with great athleticism and some good experience at this point.
Next one. Contributor, where you don't always see all the contributions. This is the last one of my major categories here, but I like this one.
This one's easy because inside the Breeze, I bring him up all the time.
Yeah.
Corey Broyles.
Okay. Interesting.
My man, Cortland.
Yeah. Yeah. It goes by Corey typically, but a full name is Cortland.
Yes.
Fun Cortland, fact. Yes. Cortland with a D on the end?
Yes. I like to call him Cortland.
Okay.
Corey, yeah. So another person who I had to cross over several times to solve, you know, availability issues.
Yeah, hinting a little bit in advance of the talking about the playoff game against New York, you are.
Yeah, right. He was in that role, too. For
sounded like Yoda there for a second. I think I reversed the order of my verb in that sentence.
Corey
on D-line, he is. I won't actually do a Yoda impression.
Yeah, I don't have the voice for it, do you?
No, and the fact that it's just getting recorded, like, I can't risk that getting replayed at me.
So, Corey, the invisible contributions of Corey.
Yeah.
They're invisible, I think, to an untrained eye, right?
Yeah.
If he's guarding somebody.
Explain to me, because he's a guy, actually, I'll be very candid here, that I don't always see his contributions. So they're invisible to my somewhat trained eye.
Fair,
tell me more.
Fair. I like to say that Corey is the guy doing the right thing so that the next guy makes the play.
Hmm.
So, you know, I think if we looked at hockey assist, I think Corey's numbers would jump up quite a bit. He's frequently throwing the breakthrough to somebody who then gets to be able to throw the next
one. Opens the side of the field, yeah.
Absolutely. He's a guy who ensures that we retain possession because he's like the primary reset on that line all the time.
Yeah.
Everyone knows it's going to come to him, and he has to find a way to get open. And he does, with consistency. I've never really seen him get shut down as a reset.
How would you feel if I threw the name Brad Scott into the hat here? Like, yes, he is a name that is well known in the community, and he's a captain. So, like, it's hard to say he's invisible.
Right.
But certainly, you know, commentators like myself, announcers, media personnel can overlook Brad Scott because his numbers don't jump off the page. But I think he plays a brand of shutdown defense that is very valuable. And I think, you know, every person that I have on the podcast here talks about Brad Scott amping them up, learning from Brad Scott in the huddle, having that positive role model that he always is. What if I put him on my contributions you don't see list?
I think that's really fair. Brad did something early in the season when we had lost our Montreal game, the very first game of the season. He decided we didn't have an identity as a team and a culture. Good point.
Yeah.
So he took it upon himself. He organized a great event. We ate together. We went over his house. And we just found each other. We talked. And that turned our season around, in my opinion, because a lot of people, I hadn't done the things necessary for people to know who each other are. you know, we were just like kind of blitzing into the season, and I think that showed in the first game, sadly. But for him to take that leadership and take that onus to say, like, this is how you do it right. This is how we establish ourselves. 2018 Breeze.
Yeah. That's quite a contribution.
It is invaluable.
Are there any other awards that that maybe jump to your mind that we should be giving to members of the 2018 Breeze?
What about the, like, I don't know. I guess I want to say maybe the guy who makes the most highlight plays.
Yeah.
Maybe the guy who came out of nowhere, like fully unexpected contributions.
Yeah.
Like, even maybe by me.
Interesting.
Like, I'd be intrigued. You brought up Reese as a player that
yeah.
I think surprised you. But,
yeah.
You know, I'm wondering, what do you think about that? Like, who came out of nowhere for you and just took you by surprise this season?
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, the guy that I would have loved to see a full season out of, and you and I have talked about before, at least just, you know, via text or anything else, is Gabe Webster.
Yeah.
Got that injury early. And for me, he didn't come out of nowhere because I've known him on the DC scene.
Right.
But I think at the pro level, certainly the AUDL level, he kind of came out of nowhere.
Because
mm-hmm. he is, you know, already, already just on this Breeze roster, a 28-year-old guy.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Right. I had no idea until after I took him. And I was
yeah.
like, oh, wow.
And, you know, for him to make the roster this year and not as, you know, one of the guys that's 1 or 2 or 3 years out of college, which is a lot of Breeze players, and then make those contributions, had some of that out of nowhere characteristic.
That's a good one.
What
about, I think, Quinn Bergeron?
Okay.
See, I came into this season knowing who Reese Bergeron was, mostly because Virginia Tech had made nationals, and I think Ulti World likes to talk about Reese, actually.
Yeah.
A fair amount. But, like, Quinn went to JMU. They, the season before, I think, were Quinn's last season there, they made the game to go in the Atlantic Coast Regionals. Pretty hard to do.
Yeah.
Definitely hard to do when you have a school like James Madison, which is, like, really good.
Yeah.
And they produce a lot of great players over the years. Lloyd Blake, I think, is from there. So, you know, a good program. I'm definitely not saying that.
Yeah.
But I just think it was unheralded. I think if they had maybe made nationals, perhaps his name is, you know, on the tip of the tongue.
Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, neither of the Bergerons were really on my radar, and I latched onto Reese's performance before I latched onto Quinn's.
Sure.
And that's, I think, why I brought him up. A guy I didn't know very well, I had to look him up on Facebook, see a picture of him at the beginning of the season, because I wasn't familiar with him. Alexander Fall.
Yeah.
Had a heck of a season.
It's only his third year playing the sport, so.
So that's, wow. So that I didn't know that either.
Yeah.
And he impressed me on D from time to time. Got the blocks that, you know, we talk about some of the more technical players and blocks becoming an endangered species in the East. No player got 20 in the East division this year. It's insane. But Fall had his handful of them. I can look up.
I think, so Rowan was...
Ball had eight.
Eight blocks! Yeah. And how many games? Not too many, right?
And not too many games either.
Because he came to us after the college season.
And only five games.
That's really impressive.
Yeah.
Rowan was instrumental in bringing him over. Rowan, I think, helped coach a little bit down there at UVA.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, he just kept telling me, Daryl, Fall. Alex Fall. Alex Fall. And we're like, all right, when's he going to show up? So, like... Yeah, I think he had a really late tryout. He wasn't really sure. He didn't feel right about trying out because he had missed, you know, some of the earlier rounds. And we're like, well, we should give you an opportunity.
Yep.
We've done that for other players in the past. You should give that opportunity.
Yep. Yeah, so, well, yeah, I mean, he got the inside touting. When you get one of your best players on the wagon,
yes,
you got to take a look.
Absolutely. Yep. And he was communicative all the way through. It wasn't like he was like a no-show, no-call, no-show. Anyway, he shows up and it's like, oh, this is the kind of player that we're looking at? This is the kind of athlete that we're talking about? This is the kind of, like, great teammate and sideline presence. He's got a real character to him. He's bold enough to, you know, rib me as a rookie.
Really?
Yes.
I did not know the side of Fall.
No, a few do. But, yeah, I think the Breeze really got something there. And, like, that's a shocking...
out of nowhere.
That's an out of nowhere get. You did it. You did it great. That was big. We just did a little pound there. You can't see that on the podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
I was so moved by Greg's... tie in there that I had to give him a pen.
Well, if we weren't in our pajamas, we would release the visual of this podcast, but it's a late night recording here in DC.
Yeah.
So, I'm glad we talked about the roster. It's really great to always hear your insight of the players and some of the awards, the call-outs you would make at the end of the season, all very positive things. Unfortunately, there is some less favorable things we have to discuss today. Maybe, I shouldn't even say they're less favorable, but they're harder topics to address for sure. Tell me the parting thoughts. I won't make you recount the game. We know it was a sloppy one, the playoff game,
yeah.
First round of the playoffs against the New York Empire. Windy, rainy, home game here at Cardinal Stadium. Parting thoughts that Coach Stanley has from that game and really from the season then.
Yeah. I had to coach some of my players the next day. A good chunk of them the very next day as truck stop. I was like, well, we're going to put that out of our minds. Because
is there a time to revisit? I mean,
yes, I've had to bring it up.
Because I understand the next day might be sit on it.
Yeah. I have thought about it. I think our playing style was not going to hold up very well with that wind and that rain. We have a high-touch play style, you know, highlighted by several 95, 96, 98% type players.
Yep.
Nathan Pryor, Troy Holland, you know, Corey is a guy in that level. Like, Lloyd Blake. I mean, I could just go on. Matt Carrigan had, I think, another 98% season. We prided ourselves in being able to change fields quickly, being able to maintain possession, being able to, you know, wear you down as a defense, make it so that you never really got an opportunity to sniff at a D because we would change our point of attack so quickly. Okay. Wind like that? We could probably have worked around that. Rain like that? Rain's the killer. Rain's what takes what looks like a 98% throw and turns it into like a 92% completion because the person on the other, like, not only might you slip and throw, that person might drop the disc.
Yeah, there's added, like, reduced friction between the cutter's cleat and the turf. There's reduced friction between their hand and the disc if they happen to get a hand there.
Their vision is reduced because rain's in their eyes.
Yeah, and all at the same time that, like, the actual thing you care about is, yeah, the rain's pounding the disc down towards the earth. But, even like, that, all those other factors are equally, I think, impactful.
Yeah, so I think, and also, in this sport, it's not like players have had a lot of opportunity to play in wind. You know, a tournament's not going to get canceled too often for wind reasons.
That's a good point.
Many tournaments will get canceled because of rain like that.
Yeah, especially when you're playing on grass fields. I encountered this last weekend with Philly Open, sure.
Yeah, so I don't think we as a sport have really grown to learn how to deal with that and like adjust our playing style like we automatically can do with the wind.
Hmm.
So I think it was that combination of like, it's a perfect storm of unfortunate.
Perfect storm? Wow.
Did I just do that?
You did that.
Very good. I think it was a perfect storm. Our play style was such.
So then, how
our
did
personnel
you,
was such?
Yeah. So all those factors, you know, well documented, and I appreciate you going through them here. You know, how do you? So back to the question of when and how do you then talk about them with your squad? Is it truly forgotten at this point, or will there be a time?
It came up again. Again, with a subset of these players, right? Yeah. Obviously, not everybody, because the Breeze have not reassembled as a team since the loss. Although we're having a party soon, so let's go. I talked to them because we had another raining situation.
Uh-huh.
Where I said, you know, this is a lesson that we've learned about where 98% ultimate turns into 90% ultimate. Like, how do you adapt? What kind of decisions do you do that are different? And for me, I think it's about, you know, throwing the disc forward.
Yeah.
You know, don't throw it horizontally as often because it doesn't get you as much. You can't get the big distance on the
rounds. Play the field positioning game.
You might have to come down to punt and pray.
Or even not punting, but if you're always passing forward, you know, at least every time they pick it up, they're going an extra, you know, maybe not 40 yards, but 10 yards.
Absolutely.
That makes a difference.
It makes a huge difference. Yeah. And unfortunately, I think a lot of our turnovers were a shorter field in that game. So, yeah.
Okay. Yeah,
that's pretty much what I talked about. I also praised the effort of those players, especially the people in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
12 minutes. I didn't see anyone quit out there. You didn't see anyone hang their head. They kept playing. A lot of people would have, you know, been really, really mad or sad or something.
Yeah.
Some sort of emotion that would cause them to not really finish the point out. But, I mean, like, I think Nathan Pryor in that point is somebody you can look at and you're just like, this man is going for it. He's running, you know, at 100%. The urgency of the situation is clearly upon him. And he just did his best in that moment to, you know, grind it out.
Yeah.
So
commendable efforts.
Yeah, there was a lot of effort there that you can hang your hat on as a coach.
So zoom out then for me. So those are some of the maybe key takeaways from the game and how you're going to kind of keep addressing these things and how you already have in some circumstances already talked about the game. Big picture, what was accomplished by the Breeze in 2018 and what was left undone?
So I came into the season looking at my roster, looking at the people available to me, the tryouts. And I said, all right, well, you know, if I want to beat Toronto I need to have some sort of an advantage on Toronto. I think last year my roster had an experience advantage that was really pretty awesome. You know, we had a lot of veterans. We had a lot of people who have really been staples in the DC scene.
Yeah.
This season, I didn't have access to that. So I wanted to get desperately taller. Somehow that doesn't happen. If you're listening to this podcast and you happen to be over 6'3", I think you should try out next season. Just saying.
Yeah. You weren't too gun shy on height. You had some tall guys.
We had specific height, as I've been calling it.
Okay.
You know, strategic height. But I would not say that we were like taller than our opponents because
Yep. So, but anyway, you're looking for that advantage.
And, you know, this roster, I looked and I said, I could probably do it with speed. And, you know, just selecting the players that I did, some of them I wasn't really sure how they would pan out, what kind of, you know, final player they'd become, because they hadn't had that experience. Or even in tryouts, you saw that there was certain, you know, rough edges around their game. It worked out pretty well. So I think this youth and speed movement, this experiment was largely successful. An 8-5-1 regular season record is pretty good.
I mean, it's a great record, and made greater by the fact that it qualified for the playoffs.
And it made us second in the playoffs too.
Yeah,
at that.
Yeah, so home game city.
Absolutely. So that was, I think, one of the success.
Okay. Points. So I guess to reword what I think I heard is to say, identifying ways that the DC Breeze could still have advantages on nearly any opponent. And you identified one of those, you executed on it, and you feel like that was, you know, successful. A hypothesis through theory, success.
Yeah, it bore out results.
Yeah.
I think something that we feel like we left on the table, I think it'd probably be my offensive systems. I think the fact that this team didn't have an alternative plan for that rainy day, that windy day.
Yeah. You were missing a lot of personnel on that rainy day, too.
We were. But season's Breeze was not about those kind of excuses. We had a lot of situations and a lot of games where we've had to deputize players for situations like that.
Yeah.
I will never make an excuse for that. I mean, I'm responsible for coaching these players, putting them in positions to succeed.
Yeah.
I feel like I did that as much as I can, and I feel like I was rewarded. So I'm not going to complain with the hand I was dealt.
Right. Except that maybe it sounds like the plan B needed to be more fleshed out.
I think so. Yeah, I think that's where I think we left something on the table. We didn't have an alternative offensive flow. We didn't necessarily have all the set plays, I think, that could have gotten us out of a situation like that. And that's on me.
Talk to me about two. I'll hold your hold your foot to the fire here. Sticking with our hot theme on hot air. There were two roster decisions in particular that I talked about in the podcast the other week. I think they are great and capable players, but I wasn't sure that they had reached the crescendo. I wasn't sure they had reached the peak of their abilities in 2018, and I was interested to see you place them on the postseason roster, given with what you had gotten out of them this year. And that was Austin Bartenstein and Xavier Maxstad. I'm hounding on the completion stat particularly.
Mm.
To be blunt, why were they on your playoff roster?
This season, handlers were at a premium. We lost Johnny Malks to an injury. We really were hoping to count on his contribution coming back. I thought he was going to be a very important aligner for us this season.
And
didn't get that opportunity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Max Castle, a guy who's played handler, cutter for the Breeze in the past. We had to shut him down due to an injury.
Yeah. Actually, I didn't know that about Max Castle.
Yeah. He was...
It's a big hit.
Yeah,
I've been questioning his,
look at the stats he put for us up in 2017. He was
monster.
He was incredible. Yeah. A breakout player for us.
For sure.
So, you know, I think with Xavier and Austin, the potency and the potential of them is immense. We saw multiple occasions where they kind of met that peak, potential that you were talking about.
Individual games this year, they were phenomenal.
Austin coming over on the O-line in the rally game, fourth quarter, right? He's the one throwing those hucks up to Rowan and helping finish that game out when we needed holes because we weren't getting breaks anymore.
Yeah.
Austin brought that. And Xavier had a game, I think it was up in Canada. Yeah. Pretty sure it was the Autumn game.
Okay.
Yeah. Where we made a little comeback there, won by the skin of our teeth.
Yeah.
He had like four touches that game. Three of them were assists and one of them was a goal.
Yeah.
So like 100% performance.
I mean, he puts up monster throws for sure.
So when I look at those guys, I think the reason they were on my playoff roster was partly because of availability that weekend, right?
Yep.
And definitely because I think that the two of them brought a potency that we didn't have elsewhere. Speaking of that offensive play style that I was talking about, Austin and Xavier give me the ability at any moment to kind of change up that high-tempo, high-touch play style into a, you know, downfield vertical attack offense. You need that. Otherwise, you really have no...
Make opponents adjust to something.
Right. And we saw in that game, I tried to bring over Xavier early in the game, and he got us a hold or a break, I think it was, where he threw a pretty nasty backhand into that crazy wind. And then Austin, late in the game, I realized I probably should have had him on the O-line to help the handler situation out a little bit better. Didn't think about that until too late, unfortunately. But I thought Austin played very well in the fourth quarter in the O-line.
Uh-huh.
So I think the flexibility tactically that they offer me, the potency that they bring, their pulls, they're both like two of the better pullers on the team.
That is very true.
You add all that up, it's like these guys needed to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And if they are playing very well and they're having a great game, they can win you a game.
Right.
And if they aren't, I'm pretty quick with the hook.
Yep. So no, that's very defensible. And certainly in their moments, those guys shined this year. Have you given any thought to 2019, Breeze? It's early in the postseason.
Yeah, no, I have. I think really it's about retention. We grew a lot this season. We gained a lot of skills this season. And a lot of our players who made strong impacts will be graduated or graduating. I think that means we could get a heavier dose of the Bergerons, for instance.
Yeah.
Reese in particular, because he just graduated. We could be getting a heavier dose of Zach Norbaum this season.
Yep.
Joe Richards, right? These are like key pieces that were still in college. I think
you didn't get them in the first half of the season this year, right?
Could you imagine
these guys had 5-7 games played?
How about Joe Richards in that New York game, that away New York game where we lost by one?
Yeah.
Well,
sure.
I think Ben Yacht's not going to have quite a game.
Or Christian Boxley's 22 goals in 5 games.
Boxley
extrapolated over a season.
Alex Fall, 8 blocks in 6 games.
Like, yeah.
Think about all these players.
Triple that up.
Right. So I think just retaining them is going to be a big boost to our team's consistency and smooth out some of that early season performance that we had.
Right.
I think I would love to get some more John Agan in my life.
Yeah.
I think that...
Assisting you on the bench?
Absolutely.
Yep.
Agan, Neely, I'm calling you out. Both of you. I want some Johns on my bench. I mean, look at what John Agan brought in that one game, right?
It's true.
He brought the incredible teammate that he always has been. But
right.
As a coach, he balances out my coaching style and my ethos so well with his focus on the individual and learning each person's preferences and ways and means. He could just inspire people.
He really does.
I don't know that I do that. I think I inspire, what's the word? When somebody's just really focused on doing what you've asked. John would be great, and I think that getting an assistant coach would be a really important thing for next season.
Yeah. I wondered that at times this year. It was a lot of pressure you put on yourself.
It was. I didn't mean to, but it worked out pretty well. I mean, I felt like I grew a ton this season from the lessons I learned in every loss that happened. And of course, some of those wins that we squeezed out were just, they made me ecstatic. The rally win, the
huge
Toronto
win. Yep.
I was elated upon winning those games. They were like top 5 games I've coached.
Huge. And as it turned out, you know, everyone required. Based on how the postseason standings stacked up.
Yeah, we lose either of those games and suddenly we're maybe third, maybe worse. So.
Maybe worse. If there was a sign, I thought of a cheeky little question here. If there was a sign that right now you could go commission to be created, to be in the corner of the locker room next year, based on the lessons you learned in 2018, you're putting a sign on the locker room for 2019, one motivational phrase, one encapsulation of what the players need to hear or see or a refrain. Any ideas what you might put?
Yeah. We didn't have too many mantras this season. Because that's what you would put up, right?
Yeah.
A mantra that you want to live by. I think for me, like every season, I really take the temperature of this team and see what they need. So I think a lot of coaches come in with a plan, like these are the three words or the three ideas or
yep.
that they're about and that their team's going to be about. I guess I'll talk about a sign or a word that I always demand for my players without actually saying it.
Okay.
I think it'll be discipline. I think that, you know, my teams, I expect to work hard. I expect them to adhere to the systems. I expect them to be focused on the sideline. I expect them to be professional when they deal with refs. I just expect discipline.
Okay.
You know, a commitment to a team more than yourself.
Good one.
So that's probably the word I'd put up.
The last bit of the podcast I want to talk about today, we'll move away from the Breeze season.
Yeah.
I thank you so much for all your content. I think it's very interesting. I think we've got so much content here, I might even consider breaking this up into 2 weeks of podcasts. We'll see.
Ooh.
A first-timer.
That's amazing.
And then I don't know if I count you as a four-time guest.
I think I should be at that point.
Well, you're just jumping right ahead.
I need to win.
I don't know. Put it up to a Twitter vote or something.
Okay.
Have you really? Yeah, I don't know.
Vote for me, people.
Talk to me a little bit about the AEDL finals. They happened this weekend. This bit of the podcast needs to get out tomorrow, for sure. The four teams, capable teams, descending on Madison, Wisconsin. What are your thoughts in general? What are your thoughts going in?
I think it's exciting to see new faces at the AEDL championship weekend. I mean,
first time in a couple years New York's gone, and then first time, period, for the Los Angeles Aviators.
That's an amazing thing. I think the Alley Cats, I know they're not there, but I think the season that they had was really exciting. So it's really nice to see some new names and new faces really step up. It really kind of, I think, showed that time moves on, right? And that, you know, what were once staples and givens and all that, like, there's just a next generation probably of AUDL players and coaches that are making a major difference. So that said, specific to the four that we have here.
Yeah, where's your money at?
I gotta go with, like, Dallas.
Dallas is looking good.
I mean, Double Wide laid a smackdown on me last year at semifinals with Truckstop. And, yeah, the Roughnecks, you just keep subtracting all these glittery names, and they keep performing. They keep winning.
Yes.
You know, it's really impressive.
Generating some serious talent.
Yeah. I mean, Jay Froude is unbelievable. He's Kevin Richardson's a guy who was, like, just went off in that rally. Divisional final, I guess that was.
That's right.
And, you know, I just think they have just a plethora of talent that they can kind of throw out there. A lot of great handlers, a lot of great cutters, athletes, height.
Yes.
Everything that you'd want and need, this team can go do it. Any kind of ball they need to play, they can play it.
So you don't think that New York will be a roadblock to them?
I think, actually, New York is uniquely positioned, because of their physicality, to be the best matchup. I think it's really unfortunate we're not seeing that as the final.
Yeah.
I would have loved to see New York play.
I mean, New York's so interesting because they've won the last two games in quite spectacular fashion, even if they've had to grind them out in all the terrible weather we've already discussed. And it will be interesting to see if they kind of revert to form, because they had some duds this season too.
Sure did.
Or if they can string together 3, 4, 5 games in a row.
I mean, New York, if they were playing anyone other than Dallas in their first game, I'm probably taking them as my favorite to make it to the finals.
Yeah.
But they're not.
Yeah.
They're playing Dallas.
I do. Yeah, that's interesting. I feel like it is almost a two stronger, even though it's based on record, seemingly the two stronger teams of recent memory are matching up first.
And talent heavy, right?
The talent, yeah.
No offense to Madison's talent.
Yeah.
I think their cohesion has been off the charts for years.
Yeah. And no offense to LA's talent. I think they have some top-end talent.
I'm just less familiar.
Yeah. Right. I think that's the bizarre thing about Southern California Ultimate, is it, like, hasn't really been on the national stage.
No, not for years.
And this is what we said, it's their first time at the playoffs.
Right. So
first time at nationals.
So, you know, unfair.
First time in the Final Four.
Yes. For me, like, I do a lot of, like, scouting and watching of games, and, like, I feel very... I'm not happy that I haven't had the opportunity to focus on LA a little bit more.
Yeah.
And see what they're doing to turn that around and play as well as they have. So that said, I just got to go with what I know. I think that Dallas probably edges out New York. That's unfortunate. Maybe by like 4?
Yeah. Okay.
So close game. LA and Madison, I think.
Yeah, where's your gut at in that one?
I mean, I'm just looking at paper at this point because I haven't watched enough of LA. It seems like on paper, LA's got a really strong opportunity here. Madison's at home, though.
Yeah.
So I think it'd be pretty rough to bet against the Radicals at home. They've only lost, what, one game there against Raleigh Flyers this year?
That's correct. They have lost there before, though. Last time the Final Four was in Madison.
Oh, yeah.
They lost to Seattle in the first round.
Right.
on a that huge team collapse.
What an incredible ending to that game. Donnie Clark gets an amazing
and Mark blocker goal. Start playing every point, and Donnie Clark, gets the block to herd around the world.
Unreal.
Yeah.
So, okay. I think I got to edge Madison, just because they're at home.
Yeah.
And I don't know enough about LA.
Yeah. I don't know if this is my underdog fighting spirit. I don't know if this is because I have the close-up sample size on New York this year, and I have some those recent games in my memory. But I'm actually going to take, just to record it on the podcast, I love your picks. They are, they make a lot of sense to me. I'm going to take the opposite picks, though. I think LA is a little underrated. I think they survived a gauntlet of the Western Division. That's always kind of a slugfest. You get in with, barely a winning record a lot of years.
Yeah.
And this year they got in with a phenomenal record. The only games they lost were out-of-division games, I think.
Right.
Which is pretty crazy. I think Roughnecks will go...
Or telling.
Yeah, I don't know. The hard pick is a Roughnecks Empire. Roughnecks versus the Empire for me. I think my gut says Dallas wins, but I've seen New York recently. Sure, I'll take the Empire to win. They've got a top stacked roster. They only need to play.
Oh my goodness.
You know, it's one game at a time. You play your top 8-10 guys when you're in New York. No one talks about Josh Alora. No one talks about Ben Katz too much.
They were great. They are great.
They are great players. Sure, I'll take Empire to knock off the Roughnecks. I'll take Empires to win the whole thing. Sure, I'll do it.
Oh my!
Just record it on the podcast. I've heard too much of the media taking the other the chalk, the favorites.
Sure.
That I'll be the contrarian here.
Okay, so New York to take it home for you.
Yeah.
All right, and for me, I think Dallas will close out the game against Madison. I think despite the home field advantage, I think Dallas is matchups really well against what Madison brings.
Yeah. I think more so than I am certain. More so, I do like the Aviators in the Madison game. What I really like is the winner. I think you've said it kind of already. Too bad the Empire versus the Roughnecks aren't the finals. I think the winner of that game wins the whole thing.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, either way, I think I agree.
Daryl, it was a pleasure to have you on here again. We recorded a lot of content today. Hopefully folks can parse their way through it. This could be the first podcast that takes over an hour by the time it's all edited up, which would be a landmark effort on your part. So thanks for sticking with me here. But thanks again for being on Hot Air. And thanks everyone for listening. Until next time, adios.